Welcome to Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson. 891 ABC Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning and welcome to Talk Back Gardening. Good morning, Sophie.
Good morning, Deb, and good morning, listeners, on this beautiful autumn day.
It certainly is indeed a great day to get into the garden. We're going to be talking roses very shortly because South Australia is known for its beautiful roses. Adelaide, the rose capital of Australia. If you've got a rose question, you might want to start with that this morning on 1300 222 891. We will turn to general talkback calls a little later, so if you want to get in the queue, please do. We'd love to hear from you. I have a couple of ABC Organic Gardener magazines to give away a little bit later in the program as well. And Caroline gets things going for us. Sophie has sent through a table set with the most beautiful produce and vases filled with roses, and says roses are looking great in the Clare Valley at the moment. Photo of my autumn harvest. I tell you what, that could be the cover of a book, Caroline. We'll get we'll let Sophie have a look at that while we're talking, but that is absolutely incredible. So call in with your questions, 1300 222 891. Our text line, we love your comments, is 0467 922 891. Let's introduce Gavin Woods. As I said, Rosarian Rose Judge, President of the Rose Society and former President of the Australian Rose Society. Good morning to you, Gavin.
Morning, Deb. Morning, Sophie.
And I should add something to it. He's also an award-winning Rosarian. He usually takes out the top gongs in the competition side. So Gavin is leads by example. He's amazing.
That's now in your title forevermore, award-winning Rosarian. I will get it right. And look, you have got the Rose Society of South Australia's Autumn Rose Show on tomorrow and Monday at the Noel Lothian Hall in the Adelaide Botanic Gardens. So autumn's a beautiful time for roses in South Australia, Gavin.
It's the best time of the year, without a doubt. The roses are bigger and brighter and bolder and really come to their fore in autumn. It's a wonderful time of the year for roses.
Absolutely. Now, Gavin, you know, roses, when you walk into a rose show, the first thing I get hit by is the intoxication of the scent and, you know, the kaleidoscope of colour. Describe what people can expect to see if they've never been to a rose show.
Well, they'll have a double whammy if they come to our rose show, Sophie, because People's Choice is on as well, which is the public voting for the trial grounds. So mm-hmm. they can come to our show. It's all free in the Noel Lothian Hall, and then wander on to the People's Choice and vote, and they can win up to $1,000 in product. But back to your question, I mean, really, rose shows are an absolute joy for the senses. I mean, the perfume always hits you first, and some people believe if a rose hasn't got perfume, it's not worth growing. But, yeah, roses come in the whole colour spectrum except true blue and black, obviously, but what amazes me about roses is no colours seem to clash. They seem to just blend beautifully. You can pick a bunch of mixed roses and they'll always blend. So people will see all styles of roses. They'll see the massive hybrid teas that we pellet out and show as exhibitions. So we open them with cotton wool to make sure they're round and all the petals are spread. We take the cotton wool out, so they'll see them. They'll see the tiny miniatures, which have got a really big following in the show community. They'll see the massive floribundas and shrubs. So they'll see single blooms shown just one to a vase, and they'll see massed vases of flowers. So you'll see roses grown at their very best, and you'll see all the styles and types of roses.
Absolutely. And the floral art that many members of the Rose Society do is breathtaking too. So not only can you look at just the individual rose and read the name, so you know what you can say, I need that one in my garden, but you can see, you know, the incredible artistry of the floral art ladies. Probably some men in there too. That was really sexist of me. Sorry about that. But if people are thinking that, you know, I could put some more roses in my garden, but I don't know where to start because there are hundreds of roses to choose from, going to a rose show is a fantastic thing to do because you can see the colour you want and you can talk to rosarians and get the best advice on how plants grow. Because, I mean, some roses, like you say, not only are they miniatures, which obviously have small flowers, but some roses are tiny in stature and others get, you know, 3 metres high.
So that's a very important point, Sophie. A lot of roses that you will see at the show may not be good growers. They might be show roses. It's important to somehow either talk to someone about the rose you want or go and see it growing in the botanic gardens or the trial grounds before you rush out and buy it.
Absolutely, because, you know, there's all sorts of things. That's why, just going on to the trial gardens, they do all sorts of testing on these roses before the roses are released. They've just got a code number and they look for things like disease resistance and, you know, ability to repeat flower, because you could fall in love with a rose that doesn't flower that well. It has magnificent blooms, but really in a home garden situation, you want a rose that performs well, is disease resistant, is heat tolerant and suits our climate.
So, Sophie, the website of the National Rose Trial Garden is a real repository. The trial's been running for 20 years. Mm-hmm. All the past winners are listed there with photos. And if they've won an award in the Adelaide trial, you know they're going to do well in Adelaide. So it's a really good resource.
Now, if someone's at the Rose Show and they're inspired to get a rose, are there plants for sale there?
Look, there will be this year, Sophie. We've procured some plants and we will be on selling them to the public. So I'm not sure as to the varieties, but yep. there will be potted roses for sale.
How amazing. And the most important thing too is that if you're not sure, say if you're a newbie to rose growing and you're not sure that the conditions in your garden are suitable, when you go along, you could talk to a rosarian about, you know, would roses grow in your garden, couldn't you?
Absolutely. Really important. Roses are easy to grow. Once they're established, they'll live for 20 or 30 years, give you 50 flowers a flush on average, you know, up to 5 times a year. There is no better plant. But you need to do a bit of work in preparation to planting them.
Just on that, because mine have definitely hit the post 30-year mark, no doubt about that, Gavin. What do you do if you've had a stand of roses and you want to get rid of them? They've done a great job, but it's time to go. What do you need to do to the soil and what do you need to do to make it ready for new plantings?
Look, it's a bit of work, Deb, but if you were faced with removing them now, this late in the season, for winter replant, you would probably need to do a soil replacement. So get rid of most of the soil and replace it. If you had a bit of time up your sleeve, 6 months or so, it's simply a matter of removing the rose, getting rid of as much of the root mass as you can, because there's a disease we call rose soil sickness, which no one really knows the origins of it, but we believe it's toxins released from the dying roots that prevent new roses from doing well. So get rid of as many roots as you can, and then in the same soil you go through a process of remediating the soil, so adding lots of organic matter. There are great South Australian products that will help, Neutrog products that will boost the soil and encourage microbial activity in the soil. And about 6 months later, the soil will be ready to replant.
Okay. So, well, that's
a bit of work involved, but well and truly worth it.
Yeah, and it definitely can be done. That's Craig from Malvern. Also, while I was asking that question, sent through and asked if roses can be planted where they have previously been. And with all of those things that you need to ensure that you do, certainly the answer is yes. So
absolutely.
That is fantastic. Now, we've got a caller on the line, Anne from Victor Harbour. Good morning, Anne.
Good morning.
Now, you've got lots of roses, 25, but you've got a bit of a problem as well.
I do. We have a serious black spot problem, which it blows over the fence from a neighbour's climbing rose, which is regularly infested with black spot, and it comes across the driveway and right into my stand of 25 roses, which have been there for 16 years and are just glorious. Mixed roses, standards, miniatures, and floribundas. So it's just a beautiful show. However, despite changing the mulch so that the fallen leaves don't stay in the soil, spraying constantly, I still get twice a year this terrible infestation of black spot, and I just cannot control it, which removes all the leaves off all the plants, and they just look terrible. And then it takes so much work to get them back to another flush of flowers before winter. Is there anything I can do? We've tried pebbles, we've tried bark, we've tried straw as a mulch, but all of these seem to just hold the dead leaves. I've picked the leaves every 3 days, the dying off yellow ones, hoping that will stop it crawling up the bush, but it doesn't seem to work.
Well, Anne, look, there are several things I think you can do. The first thing I'd be considering is poisoning the neighbour's climbing rose.
controversial.
That'd be the easy.
Really?
but look, Anne, if you're spraying regularly, and it's important to say that the main rose sprays for fungicide is trifurine. It's systemic, but plants become resistant to it. So it's very effective for a single spray, but you have to alternate it with something like mancozeb, which is a contact fungicide. It's not systemic. But if you alternate your sprays, you will have a better efficacy. The other thing, so you're doing all the right things as far as removing the black spot leaves. Black spot this autumn has been the worst I've ever seen it, because we've had rains and the humidity's been through the roof. I don't spray at all. Don't spray my roses at all. And my garden's full of black spot. The other thing I'd consider is really, if you think, you know, it's a hopeless situation, there are a lot of new roses that are totally black spot resistant. And they're the roses that win the trials in Adelaide. So they would be the roses I'd be looking at replacing your current roses with. Unfortunately, a lot of the old European roses, the classic hybrid teas, are very prone to black spot, because back, you know, 50 years ago, every rosarian sprayed their roses every Sunday. And we've moved away from that. I mean, you know, we're trying to live a more eco-friendly life. I haven't sprayed roses probably for 15 years, and normally I get away with it. I get very little disease, but this autumn it's been horrific.
It has been. Thank you so much. I've written those down, and I will have one more stab. And the ones that are not doing well may come out and be replaced.
Good on you, Anne.
Thank you very much.
And can I just say, Gavin, that, you know, basically, you know, black spot is caused by long-term leaf wetness on susceptible plants, you know. So we can say some roses are more susceptible than others. Also, if roses are stressed as opposed to well-fed and in optimal nutrition, they're going to be more likely to get black spot, aren't they?
I 100% agree, and that's why I believe nutritionally, with the Nutrog products, I know this is the ABC, but a great South Australian company, they produce the best rose fertiliser, and as a consequence, our roses are so much healthier than they ever were, and less prone to disease.
And those roses that you talked about that are less likely to get disease, I do know one of them was called Knockout and it came from Florida. Have I got that right? So it was bred to, if it can cope with the humidity in Florida, it's going to do pretty well out here. Is
correct.
That right?
Correct. Yeah, but there's a whole Knockout series now. The original Knockout was a dark pink, mm-hmm. But there's a whole series of different colours bred by Will Radler in the States, and they're totally disease resistant. You don't have to do a thing to them.
Oh, amazing. And, you know, I love the fact that, you know, there you are, an award-winning rosarian, you know, that takes out, well, who knows, we'll wait and see, but often takes out all the gongs on the prize benches and you don't bother spraying because, as you're right, you know, you're putting more chemical out there. It's a commitment. You just try and grow healthy roses and have good air circulation. Now, that's another thing to consider, isn't it?
Absolutely. Airflow is vital. Yep.
Okay. And what
Nutrition, well, water's the best fertiliser you can use on roses. plenty of water and good airflow, and you'll get it right 9 times out of 10.
Well, you've amazing. Answered Jeff's question asking if there were types of roses that don't get black spot. Now, Chris says we have very regular black spot on roses in Victor Harbour. It's quite common down here with the moist southerlies. I wouldn't be too quick to blame the neighbours. And on that point, please tell Anne to consider offering to help care for her neighbour's rose bush as kindness makes the garden grow more. Just a couple of other quick ones to throw your way if you don't mind, Gavin. Andrew at Myland says, just spotted aphids yesterday on a single new rose bud. Are they still a problem in the garden?
Look, aphids have just resurfaced. I saw them in Adelaide a few days ago, just hit my garden. The cold will soon get them. I just go out and hose them off with the hose with a bit of pressure. They say they've got tiny legs and it's a long way to walk back up to the top of the rose. they'll only attack the new growth of the rose, so hose them off and you should be able to control them.
Okay, and just another few texts for you. Shah on Kangaroo Island says, I have a 55-year-old Papa Milan, is that? Milan? I don't know how to say it, that I'm determined to keep. It's the last remaining of 6 roses that were painstakingly chosen by my dad when the house was built. I would very much like to restore the long bed back to its former glory. Is it still possible to get these old varieties as well, including King's Ransom, Francis Milan, Heaven Sent Bloom and Blue Moon? And Fragrant Cloud.
Yeah, look, they're all available. And Sophie will tell you, Kangaroo Island grows fabulous roses over there. Mm. Papa Mayon, it's pronounced, because Mayons are the famous French breeders, probably the most famous rose breeders in the world. But most of those varieties you went through are still commercially available because they're still very popular roses.
Okay, and Sandra asks, any hints to stop parrots eating the roses?
No, parrots are a real problem, particularly in the hills. A lot of our rosarians actually have to net their roses to prevent parrot growth. There again, they go for the red sappy growth. And one of our growers actually will only plant roses that do not have red new growth. And the parrots won't touch them. So the parrots are going for the high sugar content in the very tip growth. But they'll only go for the red tips. So if you can find roses with green tips that don't have red growth, the parrots won't come near them. But other than that, they're extremely difficult to control.
Now, I do remember Walter and Kay Duncan, the late Walter Duncan, obviously an amazing rosarian up in the Clear Valley. They put sort of fishing line strung up high up so that if birds were coming in, they'd clip their wings on it, you know, a random pattern. And that seemed to work. And at one stage, I think Alex Kowald at Frosty Flats did the same. Do you think that works?
Look, it's got limited efficacy, Sophie. They use it in the botanic gardens as well. But the parrots learn to come down and come underneath. So, look, it's got some benefit and it's certainly worth a try, but the parrots are pretty smart.
I love that.
Just a couple of quick ones. Roses shooting long, long stems. Have I made a mistake? I pruned them halfway down.
No, long, long stems is the norm in autumn. I mean, I'm picking stems probably, you know, up to 90 centimetres for the rose show. There's enormous stems. That's normal.
Okay. And Maha says, where can I purchase Rosa centifolia? They have a beautiful fragrance and we use them for Gulkand, rose water, etc. back in India. Where can I get these plants?
Well, I think that's going to be somewhat difficult. Probably your best bet would be Ross Roses at Wollunga. Mm-hmm. I think they'd be the most likely supplier of centifolia.
Okay.
But I'm not 100% sure on that.
And Beck says, I adore my climbing Pierre de Ronsard, but I'm constantly battling black spot. Could you recommend a pink climbing rose that is black spot resistant?
No, I think Pierre's the best pink climbing rose. There's nothing better. So I would be looking at managing the black spot on it.
And look, Rob from Plimpton Park raises a point that I agree with. It says, I just looked up the Autumn Rose Show on the Botanic Gardens website and it says the show is on Saturday and Sunday. And that's what I originally had in my rundown as well, but it's actually on tomorrow and Monday.
Yes, I apologise for that. I wasn't aware of that. No, it's tomorrow from 12 noon and again on Monday all day at the Botanic Gardens.
So
People's Choice, the confusion is, sorry to interrupt, the confusion is that People's Choice, the public voting in the trial garden, is today and tomorrow. And the rose show's tomorrow and Monday. So we're not totally aligning up. Someone decided to get married in the Botanic Gardens today and took our booking. So pretty rude, I think.
All right, Gavin, we'll let you get back to it. And I'm just going to let you go with this moniker, Gavin Wood's award-winning rosarian, Rose Judge, President of the Rose Society of South Australia, former President of the Australian Rose Society. Gavin, thank you so much for your time and have an excellent autumn show.
Sounds good to me, Deb. Bye now.
Thank
Bye, Sophie.
You.
See you, Gavin. Good luck with everything.
And Sophie, Elizabeth rang through to say that fishing line is used all through the Barossa Valley to stop parrots from eating roses.
Yeah, absolutely. And but I do find it interesting what Gavin said. You know, it probably the birds will learn how to come in underneath.
Yeah.
So tricky.
They know how to survive. If we are Talkback Gardening, any call you've got on any topic, Sophie is here to take it on 1300 222 891.
You're with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson. Talkback Gardening.
891.
ABC Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
We certainly are. Curtis has called from Parkside. Curtis, you've got some onion weed in your lawn. Oh, no.
Yeah, I actually relayed the back lawn and it did really well. And then some loser was house sitting for me and didn't water it over the summer. So I managed to regain that, but the front one is just full of this onion. And I don't really want to relay the front lawn, but I just can't work out how to get rid of the damn thing.
Okay. Good luck with that. Ultimately, you know, onion weed has a bulbous base, okay? So if you just try and pull it out, the bulb stays in the ground and it's got little bulbils or bulblets that sort of, if you pull the plant, the little bulblets stay there and you're actually getting more. If there were just some random clumps, if you were to dig with a spade or a trowel when the ground is really wet, if you were to dig out the entire clump, don't knock the soil off because the soil will have little bulblets in it and, you know, get rid of it completely, you could manage it. But if it's everywhere, you're going to have to use some sort of herbicide but obviously that's going to kill, you know, that is likely to damage the lawn. There are some selective herbicides, but you'll need to get advice from a lawn specialist on that. Otherwise, if you painted on glyphosate, you know, onto the foliage of the onion weed, it will go down to the bulb. But it's a big thing, you know. If if you could, I would go out there and dig out clumps, but if it's over the entire lawn, that may not be possible. And then you'll have to just backfill with some some clean soil. Mm. And if it's a running lawn, which most lawns in South Australia are, it will fill in over time.
Yeah, okay, because my neighbour, they ended up with the same issue and they actually had to relay their entire lawn. I was just trying to avoid that, but I think I might just have to relay the
If you relay it and you've still left some onion weed underneath, it'll come back, right?
Oh, yeah, yep.
So, okay. So actually you've got to deal with the problem properly. Just digging up the top and leaving the bulbs there, it will come through your new lawn too. I wish, you know, I feel like I'm being the bad cop here, but, you know, hard work is going to be involved in getting rid of it either way, Curtis. Good luck with that.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Sophie.
Yeah, thanks for that. Good luck, Curtis. Someone did text through saying, I think he's relayed his new lawn straight over the top of the bulbs.
Yeah.
Just returning to roses, thank you to Beck from Victor who sent through the most gorgeous deep orange rose picture and asks us to all have a great day. Straight back at you, Beck, as always. Another Beck asked for a suggestion of a pink climbing rose that was black spot resistant. This texter says China Doll is not susceptible to black spot.
Yeah.
And Christine says Pinky is very disease resistant and a reliable climbing rose as well.
And both of those are beautiful, but they are not full like Pierre de Ronsard is. They are a more open flower, still absolutely gorgeous, but, you know, the problem is if you're imagining that sort of old-fashioned looking thing, China Doll and Pinky don't quite cut it.
Mm, okay. Now, Maureen from Moana would like to know if you have heard of wool pellet fertiliser and whether you have an opinion on it.
I have heard it and I actually saw it at the Melbourne International Flower and Garden Show. As a fertiliser, I can't comment, but there are lots of farmers that have used wool dags around their, you know, the sort of when they're shearing sheep, the stuff that's too mucky to use in a wool bale, and they've used it as mulch. And I've seen, you know, a friend use it on their roses. I've seen another friend use it on his dahlias. So, I'm sure there is benefit in it, but I don't think it's being produced in South Australia at the moment. And, you know, obviously, you know, you need someone to have trialled it.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much for that. We are coming back very shortly for more Talk Back Gardening. So it is very easy to talk directly with Sophie. Just ring in on 1300 222 891, or you can send us through your comments on the text line on 0467 922 891.
Welcome to Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson.
891.
ABC Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning and welcome to Talk Back Gardening. Good morning, Sophie.
Good morning, Deb, and good morning, listeners, on this beautiful day.
It is indeed. If you've got some time to step into the garden and you'd like some advice from Gardening Australia's own Sophie Thompson, we have her here for you. Call in now on 1300 222 891. If you've got a comment to make on the text line, please send it through on 0467 922 891. I have a couple of ABC Organic Gardener magazines to give away later in the program, one by phone and one by text, but we'd love your calls now. So call in 1300 222 891. We are Talk Back Gardening now and we need your calls, 1300 222 891. Sophie, just before we go to calls, we've got some text messages through talking about a leaf cutter bee. This yep. texter says, I've got a healthy leaf cutter bee on my avocado tree. I noticed a couple of leaves looking very much cut, but then realised that the bee was also there. Are you familiar with it?
I am. These are the most amazing native bee, and they actually like, I was expecting them to say rose leaves. So it looks like someone's got a hole punch and taken a punch off your leaf And then if you watch what the bee does, then the bee flies back to where it's making its nest. Now, they're a hollow-dependent bee. So if you've got a native bee hotel, they'll be using one of the hollows in a wooden block, if you've made that. But what they do is they get all these little rounds of leaf and they make it into a sleeping bag which sits inside the hole in the wood. And they make it into this sleeping bag, and when they lay their egg and they leave the pollen or nectar for the larvae to eat when it emerges, they seal it off with a bit of leaf. So if you're ever looking at a native bee nesting block and you see a bit of green leaf over one of the openings, that is made by a leafcutter bee. Now, this is one of the 2,000-plus native bees we have in Australia, and they are solitary bees, so they don't give us honey, but they are really important for their pollination services.
How wonderful. You are such a font of knowledge, Sophie. I don't know how you can retain it all, but that is really a fascinating story, and I had a total vision then of a little sleeping bag in a hole in a tree there.
So Google it. You know, if people are listening to this, just Google it, and you'll find a photo of a bee, you know, literally holding this ring of leaf, you know, this little round disc of leaves and flying. They are amazing.
Wonderful. 1-300-222-891 to speak to Sophie Thompson. Lizzie in McGill has called that number. Good morning, Lizzie.
Oh, good morning, Deb and Sophie. Yes, I was wondering if you could help me out with my protea problem. I've had it for about 5 years, after about 3 years in a pot.
Yep.
And it flowered on about the third year. And then this year it had seven blooms on it. Mm-hmm. And I was so excited, but then they all went brown.
Okay.
And like it is when they've finished flowering and they go brown, that's how they went.
Before
they started flowering.
How big is this pot, Lizzie?
Oh, I don't know. It's quite a big one.
Like a foot across or?
Oh, more than that. Yeah.
Okay. Because proteas are large shrubs, so trying to keep one in a pot is certainly not an easy thing to do. Can I ask, is the foliage healthy and green?
Oh, beautiful. And I was thinking of getting it out and putting it in the ground.
Okay. I would love it if you could do that. I mean, I know you might need someone to help you if it's a big root ball, but it's always going to do far better in the ground than it will in a pot, because if it dries out in a pot, its flowers will probably end up doing what's happened to you, whereas in the ground, you know, they're going to be much more heat and drought resistant. I would get it in the ground if you can. Some proteas do need acid soil. That's why I asked about the foliage colour. So, you know, if you can be aware that you give them special fertiliser, same fertiliser you use for native plants would be ideal. And yeah, perfect. Okay, so I would plant it out, Lizzie, and I think it just probably dried out. Bear in mind we had two of those extreme heat events back in January, and, you know, even though you could say, well, it was flowering later than that, it's when the plant's in its bud form. If it dries out, the buds won't develop properly.
No, well, they developed. One of them was quite large before it went brown. But anyhow, shall I do that now in autumn?
I reckon it'd be fantastic to do that now.
Yeah.
And, you know, be aware of, you know, just keeping an eye on the water, but then it will make it, you'll certainly need less watering to keep it happy.
All right then. Lovely. Thank you so much.
Thanks
Good
for calling,
you,
Lizzie.
Lizzie.
Yep.
Bye.
Lovely to hear from you. 1-300-222-891. Lynn is in Port Lincoln. Lynn, what's happened to your roses? Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Yes, you may have already covered this. I missed the discussion on the roses with the rosarian. But I've been away for just over a week, and I got back and half of the roses have lost most of their leaves and look really scraggy. And then I noticed there's a lot of aphids on the other roses, and the leaves are yellowing. And black spot on them, but they really do look a mess. And I'm quite new to growing roses, so I'm not quite sure what to do about it, whether just to prune them back. I mean, I'll spray off the aphids on the roses that have still got leaves, but Yes, what would you suggest?
Okay, well, the black spot is just a seasonal thing this year. Lots of people have had it. But yes. Why the plants lost most of their leaves? Are these in pots or in the ground?
No, they're in the ground. But they may have dried out because we got a couple of hot days while I was away. And okay, the irrigation wasn't on.
Okay, so I would just assume then that they've dried out. You know, I wouldn't go pruning them. I'd give them a good feed. I'd give them, you know, make sure that they get a good water. As I love it when Gavin talks about the best fertilizer that you can give to roses is water. You know, so the reality is that I would just be picking up the water and, you know, don't prune them till we get to winter. You could tidy them up, get rid of any dead heads, things like that. But, just wait till winter for their major prune, but feed and water them now and I think you'll find that they'll come back.
Oh, fabulous. Yes, it was a bit of a shock.
Oh, it is. And it's disappointing too. But, you know, it actually, bear in mind that even if we don't get rain, if we've got wind, wind dries things out just as much as, you know, heat does. So keep an eye on it.
And there is a lot of wind here. It's extremely windy. Mm.
Okay. And what sort of soil have you got, Lynn? Have you got sandier soil or heavy clay soil?
No. Some of it in the garden's clay. And up here I've had a lot of pea straw. I've been building up pea straw for quite a few years. But I said, it would be alkaline, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, just a good feed and water. And, you know, if you're away and the plants dried out, that's why they would lose their leaves.
Oh, fabulous. Okay, thank you, Sophie.
Thank you, Lynn.
All the best with that.
Yep. Okay, thank you. Good luck. 1-300-222-891 is the number to call. Now, Julie in Maitland says, I had aphids on my roses. I planted feverfew underneath and now have very few aphids. What is feverfew?
So feverfew is sometimes called migraine herb. It's a pretty little plant that has heads of little daisy flowers. Now, I often talk about you plant to bring in the beneficial bugs, and the two groups of flowers that do this the most, one is daisies, and feverfew has lots of little daisy flowers, and the other is umbels, and umbels are things like Queen Anne's lace or, you know, parsley flowers, chive flowers, lots of little flowers, because the beneficial bugs, such as ladybirds, lacewings, and hoverflies, are attracted by the nectar, and they come in for the nectar of these flowers, and then they lay their babies, which are carnivores and want to eat aphids, on your aphids to wipe out your aphids. The thing about feverfew, I have actually brought feverfew out to this new garden. I love it for picking. I love to be able to have a couple of sprays of that with some other flowers in a vase. However, it's, how do I say this nicely? It can be a bit of a thug and it can self-seed into lots of places. So I would be careful of letting it take over near your roses because ultimately it could create a bit of root competition and obviously, you know, resources are competed for. So while it's lovely to have feverfew in certain places in your garden, just make sure it doesn't take over.
Yes. Well, Julie, excellent text. Thank you very much for that. This texter says, roses, pale leaves, feed iron sulfate. Where do you stand on that one?
Okay. So roses in our alkaline soils. Now, generally, South Australia has alkaline soils, not everywhere, but, you know, there are patches of acid soil through the hills. But generally, we have alkaline soils. So roses can get a bit chlorotic, which means their leaves go paler in colour with darker green veins. And that is where the alkaline soil locks up the iron that's in the soil and it's not available to your plants. So you can feed iron directly, as in iron sulfate, but I prefer to have a balanced fertilizer that you put out that has everything in it. It has all the different nutrients in it. And then the rose takes what it wants when it wants it. So it's a bit like, you know, if I become iron deficient and we say, well, Sophie, you're just going to take iron tablets. You're not going to have a healthy diet. You know, you're going to still eat, you know, things that are out of balance. I would prefer to have a healthy diet to try and get my iron levels more balanced than just to apply the iron itself.
Right.
So, you know, it is a sign that your plant is lacking iron, but if you're doing a balanced fertilizer, and fertilizers designed for roses in South Australia have extra iron in them because that's what we need.
Exactly. Thank you very much for answering that. 1300 222 891. If you'd like to speak to Sophie, Joylene in Wallaroo has done just that with a rhubarb question. Welcome, Joylene.
Yes, good morning. Sophie, I read in an article, I think it was on Facebook, I'm not sure, that you mentioned forcing the rhubarb and you put pots underneath it or alongside it or something to get it to ripen to the red. Is that correct?
Oh, I haven't heard that. Can I say some rhubarbs are grown from seed, and so there is quite a bit of variation in different rhubarb plants, and rhubarbs will be, some stems will be greener than others and some stems will be redder than others. So if you've got one with green stems, I don't know that you're going to be able to do anything to make it go red. Is that what the issue is?
Well, I get them halfway red.
Yeah,
but not so all that, red.
Yeah, but that's probably just your plant, okay? If the rhubarb plants were grown from seed, so what you need to do, you need to find a friend, you know, up there, someone in the Wallaroo Garden Club will have a really red variety and get a division of their plant, and then it will be really red. So I don't think anything you're going to do will make it go really red if it's, you know, over the years I've had lots of different plants and some have been redder than others, and ultimately you want to go down to just the really red ones.
Yes. Okay then. No worries. Thank you for your help.
Good luck with that, Joylene.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Joylene. Lovely to hear from you. 1300 222 891 is the number to speak to Sophie this morning. If you haven't won anything from the ABC in the last month and you would like to win yourself an ABC Organic Gardener magazine, then you can call now on 1300 222 891 or send a text with your full name and postal address to 0467 922 891.
You're with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson. Talkback Gardening.
891.
ABC Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
We are Talkback Gardening. Love to hear from you on 1300 222 891. Sophie Martin from Crystal Brook says, as varroa mite establishes in Australia and eliminates our feral bee population, we will rely more on our native bees for pollination. Do you share that perspective?
Absolutely. So just to clarify that, the varroa mite affects honeybees. So managed hives, so members of the Beekeepers Society or the apiarists, they're going to have to be treating their managed hives to control the varroa mite. But the feral honeybees, which for example are the honeybees that live, say, in a hollow in an old gum tree, sometimes people think they're native bees, but actually they're honeybees that have gone feral, they will not be treated, obviously, because there are so many hives around and people don't even know where these hives are. So they are probably likely to decline significantly, and suddenly we'll realise that the pollinators we've taken for granted aren't there, and the native bees are even, you know, the fact there are 2,000 species of native bees doing pollination services in our garden, will suddenly become more aware of them. How do you encourage native bees in your garden? You plant local native plants. So even if you've got a small garden, look at the verge, to work out how you can turn it into a nature strip, and then you'll still have pollinators when, you know, the feral honeybees are not available.
Okay, thank you very much for that, Sophie. Joel has called in from Gulf View Heights, re roses. Good morning, Joel.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes, we can.
Excellent. I've got a number of rose cuttings, and I find I can often get them to the callusing stage, but then they just don't root. And I was wondering if you had any tricks to encourage that next step.
Okay. So it's been a while since I've done any rose cuttings. They actually call it rose rustling, and often it's done by people that say have a particular rose that's got really old and they want to keep it going, or they see a beautiful one in a graveyard or by an abandoned house. So Walter Duncan once told me that once he'd got them to callus, he used to dip them in something like honey or a striking powder or rooting hormone, and then he would put them in sharp sand in a terracotta pot. And it meant that, and then keep that sharp sand moist. And he had great success with that. But Joel, what I would suggest is if you're free tomorrow or Monday to head along to the Rose Society show, because there are a whole lot of master rose propagators there who do roses from cuttings. You know, there's a whole movement actually to away from grafted roses to roses produced by cuttings, because many roses grow just as well from cuttings as they do from grafting. So I would do a bit more research. I know it's been a long time since I've done it. I do remember doing it, but I'm not a master rose rustler. But it's a great thing to do, because many roses do grow just as well on their own roots as they do as grafted specimens. And then you don't have the issue with roses suckering. And, you know, basically it's free. Good on you, Joel.
Thank you.
Thank you for the call, Joel. Yes, I was always wondering why rootstock was big, and then I spoke to several rosarians that had travelled, Kim Cirrus amongst them, to America, where they just don't use them at all, rootstock.
No, that's right. And ultimately, it's part of, you know, some roses do grow better on a rootstock, but not always. But if you are propagating roses by cuttings, you have you need more material than you do when you're budding, if that makes sense. So, you know, a piece of rose material that's, say, 30 centimetres long might give you one cutting, whereas if you can bud, you'll get 20 roses off that piece of rose material.
Gee.
So, it's a really interesting, you know, things come in cycles, Kim Cirrus has just done a study tour on the fact that more people are doing roses from cuttings.
Yeah, he's just got so much knowledge. Very fascinating. We'll get him in again sometime this year. Just on our magazine winners, congratulations to Anne-Marie in Wayville and Debbie in Murray Bridge, who will be getting an ABC Organic Gardener magazine being sent their way. Sophie, on the text line, Ali at McGill asks this: I have a lot of bearded virus. I think that means iris. Autocorrect. There you go. And they still have green growth. They never lose it. I want to lift and divide, as I'm not getting enough flowers. They are planted in amongst all my roses. When do I lift and divide these, and how then do I plant and feed?
Okay. So bearded iris are really tough. They have a tuber and foliage, and most of the ones in my garden are evergreen too. So now that the weather has cooled, you could lift and divide them from now on. But obviously, if you're causing a lot of root disturbance to your roses, you might be better to wait until the roses are dormant and, you know, not in leaf. But you could do it from now on. And basically, when bearded iris get to be a really full clump, their flowering will reduce and all of that. So dig them up, put some bits back, and share the others around. They're a wonderful, you know, they're the rainbow of the, you know, they are like a rainbow of the plant world, bearded iris. They're amazing.
Oh, that's lovely. Thank you, Ali, for that question. And this texter says, John across the road has problems with his apricot tree. Leaves are spotted black with dead crunchy bits. Didn't produce as well this year. Can you tell me what help it needs? And there is a photograph of a very sick looking leaf with brown spots and quite pale green. Yeah.
And we can see pale green leaves with darker green veins, which is a sign of what we were talking about before on roses, chlorosis. So I would be looking at the nutrition that plant's received. Maybe it hasn't been fed for a while. So autumn is a great time to be feeding all your fruit trees. You might think, well, they're not really using it, but if you put something organic down, you know, it's feeding the soil and making the plant happier. The other thing I would look at is whether anything has happened near the tree in the last, you know, year or so that's different. So say if someone limed, I don't know why you'd use lime in Adelaide, but sometimes people do use lime, or if someone did some concreting and washed a wheelbarrow that had lime in it near the plant, that could cause some problems like that. So ultimately I'd use an organic balanced fertiliser suitable for fruit trees, and I think the plant should be better in springtime. The little bit of black spots, that's a little bit of fungal disease going on, but ultimately when plants are healthy, they're less likely to get pests or diseases, so just feeding your plant will have an effect.
Yeah, exactly. And just finally, Karen says, can you please recommend a climber to grow on a fence in frost-prone birdwood?
Oh, Karen needs to get along to Frosty Flats, which is the beautiful garden of Alex Cowold, often open. It's just as you come into Birdwood from Mount Torrens. And Frosty Flats is full of beautiful roses, and they are in the frostiest position ever. So the timing of your rose pruning might just be altered slightly. It might be a little bit later than normal, but roses certainly take the frost, and ultimately it comes down to whatever colour you want. Head along to the Rose Show and see the display.
Good recommendation, Sophie. Now, we have got the Adelaide Hills Garden Affair coming up next weekend. Can you believe that we are already in May?
I know. It's next weekend, next Sunday, the 5th of May at Stangate House and Gardens. And if you've never been there, it's a National Trust property. It's the home of camellias and rhodos and much more, but it's also the home of a beautiful Adelaide Hills Garden Festival, the Garden Affair. Tickets via Try Booking. So it's Sunday, the 5th of May from 10 till 3:30. Great lineup of speakers. I'll be there. So do check it out and get your tickets.
Wonderful. And Sophie, it has been a very busy, another busy Saturday Talkback Gardening with you. You'll be back with Jason tomorrow morning from 11 until 12. But it's important to know that if you ever want to hear back anything that you hear on Talkback Gardening, you can hear the whole of the program from 8 until 9:30 if you go to abc.net.au/Adelaide, click on programs, and it will offer up the whole of the Saturday program. You just find Talkback Gardening and you can listen into that. Or you can catch 1 hour of our Talkback Gardening on a Saturday, which is podcast and available via the ABC Listen. So please, lots of ways to listen back. You just need to wait a little bit of time for whole program to come up, so it won't be available to you until well after 10:30. And the podcast should be available to you from Monday after the program. Sophie, you'll be out in the garden as always.
I will this afternoon, absolutely, and looking forward to it. So to all our listeners out there, have a great weekend and happy gardening.